Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Shay Anything Podcast. It's Doug Williams and Keith Hernandez with you this week. The good news is we're with you every week of the offseason. This week, you'll hear from us twice. We're doing the Monday episode with Keith, and then later on in the week, we'll do one with Andy after Steve Cohen and Sandy Alderson's press conference. I'm sure there'll be a lot to digest there. We thought it would be good to catch up with all of you twice this week. It's pretty newsworthy, Keith, since we last spoke. The Mets have a new owner. How about that?
Yeah. So it's a new era in Met history, you know. So this will be defined as the Steve Cohen era. I like the things that he's been tweeting out and saying. Did a nice thing with the workforce around the stadium there, and wants to bring back certain things. Obviously, he's a Met fan, and he wants to win, and he's got a little bank, so we'll see where it goes. You know, brought Sandy back, just a lot of changes.
Yeah. Speaking of his tweets and speaking of changes, so he's just been openly asking for suggestions on Twitter, which you may have seen, and, you know, Met fans are suggesting things, one of which was Old Timers Day. Now, I saw somebody tweet this, so it's not my original thought, but it is a great thought. That there is a reality in 2021 where we're in front of a full ballpark, hopefully, fingers crossed, and Gary Cohen's on the call, Keith Hernandez is at the plate, and Ronnie's on the mound. Will you play? I know you've been hobbled with a couple injuries the past couple of years. Are we going to be healthy enough to take the field and dig in at the plate?
Of course I'll play. I'll look forward to it. I'm very excited about them, Mr. Cohen bringing back wants to bring back Old Timers Day. I think it's a fun day. You get all the players there to come out. People love to see the old players. Come on, Met fans there's a great love affair between Met fans going back to 62. So I think it's just a terrific idea.
What do you think if you had to prepare yourself mentally and physically for the matchup with, say, Ronnie? How do you think his stuff will hold up? How do you think you'll be, you know, what kind of shape do you think you'll be in at the plate?
I think I will be like a rickety old rusty gate. That's what I think. I think Ronnie will have the edge. I know the last Met old-timers game I played in, and I was retired a few years, so I wasn't in that bad of shape. I've had to face Kuzman, of all people. And Jerry threw me a curveball first pitch. In lap. So anyway, I will not. I mean, I haven't swung a bat in years, so decades. So it would be a little frightening. Well, not frightening, but you know, you're just going to go out there and have fun. If I strike out, I strike out. If I make contact, I just hope when I run the first base, I don't pull a hamstring.
You're going to need to bring your trainer to stretch you out beforehand. You can't be pulling hamstrings. You've had calf issues. I know that. You can't re-aggravate that calf injury, whatever, 30 or 40 years later. What do you think about the fact that the new owner, as you mentioned, Met fan, as you mentioned, he's been on Twitter. What do you think about the fact that he's soliciting ideas from the average Met fan and that he's been very communicative with them so far?
Well, I tell you, he did not have the certification. I wasn't sure if it was him.
Yeah, verified. He wasn't verified yet.
Yeah, well, yeah, verified is the word, right. So, you know, it could be anybody. And so I sent a private email to him like around 3 days ago. And I said, I wrote, "Is this really you, Mr. Cohen? And if it is, congratulations on becoming the new owner of the Mets. I'm looking forward to meeting you in spring, blah, blah, blah." But I was a little reluctant to put anything on there because I wasn't sure because it wasn't verified. But now that you say that is him, I'll let the fans do all the suggestions for him. That's a reach out for him. I'm looking forward to meeting him.
Yeah. So when he first started tweeting, I just thought it was some creative Met fan trying to pose as the owner. And sometimes those parody accounts can be very popular if you're pretending to be somebody. And then Steve Cohen's wife tweeted, and she's active on Twitter. She's also a Mets fan, tweeted that that's really him. So he's been active the whole time. Before the sale closed, he told us when he thought it was going to close. He told us when the presser was going to be, which, by the way, is Tuesday of this week. It's tomorrow as we tape now. Right. That will be live on SNY at 12:30 p.m. All of SNY's digital platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Also, we're going to do an hour-long baseball night in New York Tuesday night after that press conference. So obviously there will be a lot to react to. What are you, I'm assuming you will, if not tune in live, you'll watch tomorrow to hear from Sandy and Steve Cohen. What are you looking forward to hearing, Keith?
Well, I want to hear what direction the team is going. I mean, they've got to pick a general manager. What has Sandy got in mind? Will Sandy make an announcement? I don't know. Make a choice. And that would become kind of the press conference announcing a new general manager. But certainly with the winter meetings looming, they've got to put together a staff. But I think the good thing about it is that even if they haven't, I think, Sandy's a baseball man. Sandy's basically the COO, president, COO of the ball club. He's going to have a big say in what the philosophy going forward for the Mets ball club. So I think he's already formulated ideas. It's just a matter of getting the general manager to do the work, the getting on the phones and talking to the other general managers and seeing what's out there and how they can improve the ball club. The club needs a lot.
You know what makes a successful team and roster. And you mentioned that you're curious to hear what the philosophy of these two guys will be as they work in tandem. What do you think they should do? Do you think there should be big shakeups in the roster? Do you think they have a good core of young players that they should really touch? If you were Sandy, and obviously he's still has to hire a GM, what would you think the philosophy should be?
Is there going to be pressure to win now? That's a big question. That should be one of the questions asked. I think the one of the most important question, or we got a nucleus of young players on the offensive side, the everyday players, are we going to build around that? Or are we going to go out and get a Lindor or an Arenado who are, late 20s, early 30s? That would tell me they want to win now. That to me is going to be the big, once we find out what direction they're going in that regard. Remember, all these players that are here now last year on that offensive unit were all Alderson draft picks, just about, if I'm correct. So, yep. If Alderson, Sandy brings back Ricciardi and the other guy, I can't think of his name. Top
John Rico.
Yeah, to me, it'll be a seamless transition. Because those were Sandy's guys in the past, and they work together. They're the same philosophy. That'll answer a lot of questions if he goes in that direction.
I think maybe John Rico was the name you were thinking of. Maybe it was somebody else
too. There's someone else too, but Ricciardi. They were all here, and they all, when Brody took over, they all left. So. I have a hunch they're going to come. Rico is going to stay, and
yeah,
maybe it's going to be Ricciardi is going to come back.
Yeah. To your point, I think they are a win now team, Keith. I don't think there's any way that we hear from them tomorrow. And Brody's thing was we're ready to win now and win in the future. I don't think there's any way that they paint a picture where it's not, let's get to work and build a World Series team in 2021. The question, I guess, is how do you go about doing that? And also, you might have been thinking of Paul DePodesta, who is now he's now with the Cleveland Browns, I believe.
Right, and I don't know if he's going to leave.
No, I don't think he is. Andy's reporting has been that he's going to stay put. But I'm curious to see how similar the front office will look. But speaking of Lindor and Arenado, Keith, this is a difficult proposition, right? Let's say Francisco Lindor is going to be his 27-year-old season. So he's still pretty young. But the question is, would you be willing to trade, Med Rosario, Andre Ximenez, Ronnie Maurizio, a prospect, or maybe even Pete Alonso or Dom Smith? Would you be willing to trade away young players to bring in somebody like that, who it's not a guarantee that you will sign to a long-term contract once he gets here?
That's a tough question. And it's, there really are some tough decisions that have to be made. I would have everybody out there. I would think that there would be, and DeGrom is obviously someone you want to keep. You throw out all the names. To me, there's no untouchables on this team, even on the offensive side, because you never know what the other side might offer, what they might bring. A combination of three Met players might bring you, who knows what it'll bring you. But I would be open to all offers. I'm sure there'll be a lot of clubs that are being interested in a lot of Met players, and see what they got to say. You're not making a deal. You got all ears and eyes open to see what's out there, and maybe something comes up where they give you, you have the steal of the century and it's too good to turn down. To me, the pitching is always, like I said, is always important, and our bullpen was not good last year. And we're not going to have Syndergaard. I think our immediate need is pitching. I mean, we think we saw it last year. If you don't have pitching, you're not going to go anywhere. And you got a Braves team that's pretty doggone good now at the top of the heap in our division.
I know pitching is priority number one to you. Where would signing Michael Conforto an extension be?
I think Michael Conforto would be the one untouchable, because he stepped up last year. It's just such a shame we had that COVID season, and it's not a full season. But I really think that Michael, what I see now is stepping up and being the stand-up guy on that team. And I feel that he could be you don't have to appoint a captain, but just the leader of that team, because he has a good work ethic. He plays hard every day. Remember, he played almost every day when everybody was getting a rest. He played, I think, around 6 weeks in a row of games. And He's an Iron Man, and that's the kind of guy you want to keep on your team. He hustles. So to me, I think that I would be inclined to give him a nice little long-term contract, because you got to be careful. I remember Jim Cott told me a long time ago, when I signed my 5-year deal with the Cardinals, and Gary Templeton signed with me, when John Claiborne came over from, I believe it was the Red Sox, became our general manager after they fired Bing Devine. And we were the new up-and-coming stars, a new generation of Mets that would evolve into the 80s Mets. And, I signed a $3.8 million contract for 5 years, which was the second highest contract at that time. I believe it was after the 79 season. So Jim Cott always said, you got to know who you give the long-term contracts to, because you can kind of get rest and sit back on your laurels, become kind of a fat cat. Conforto is not that kind of guy. Conforto will be a guy that will want to live up to that contract. He's got that kind of character.
I find it fascinating that you say that he may be the one untouchable on the position player side, because we've had the young position players younger than he is come up and with flashes of brilliance, Pete Alonso, Jeff McNeil, Dom Smith. But I actually agree with you. I think he's a foundational piece. I think he's coming into his own. He's never been better. Mm-hmm. And also, he's a player rep. He's clearly a leader. And the guys around him respect him. He has a really solidified place in that clubhouse. Right.
He's kind of like the closest thing to David Wright. He's got that good upbringing, his family. He's got good values, he's a solid citizen.
Yeah. And I would say that Dom Smith's probably the closest behind that for me, just because you know this better than anybody, Keith, but the talent that he has, the ability that he has to kind of ditch that launch angle stuff, and it just seems so free and easy. And that seems like a swing and an approach that I'm not sure is prone to slumps or really like deep struggles throughout his career, like we saw with Pete. I would be very hesitant to let go of Dom Smith at this stage of his career, especially after the season he just had.
And he's young too. And so's Pete. Now, it's going to pose a problem. There hasn't been decided yet whether it's going to be a DH next year or not. If there's not a DH next year, then you haven't got a place. I don't care for Dom out in left field. And it's no criticism of Dom. He's not a left fielder. He's a first baseman. And, it shows defensively out there. And it's a big ballpark we play in 81 games out of the year. He's not fleet of foot. He hasn't got a strong arm because when you're a first baseman, your longest throw is a double play to throw to second base. You know, you're not conditioned to throw long. So it's a big liability when he's out in left field, when you're trying to keep both bats in the lineup. And you're also, now you're losing defensively, you're losing it in two positions because Dom is clearly a better fielder than Pete. Pete, to me, it's a sophomore year. I've got to give him another chance of a comeback year because it's got, you just can't turn a blind eye to 52 home runs. You can't, he's got that capability. So just can't turn a blind eye to that and just shoo him off. But, if he brings a ton of people and you get him out of the league, because he's clearly a DH, and you can get four or five players that can help you now. There's a lot of ifs, ands, and buts out there right now.
Yeah, the DH thing is so weird because that's a really important decision for Major League Baseball to make to a team like the Mets. I mean, to your point, you've got two potential all-star level first basemen, and you only have a spot for one.
Yep.
And so you got to decide what to do in the offseason. You know, Sandy Alderson is about to hold a press conference with Steve Cohen, and he's going to be asked, I would guess, about something like this. And he may have to say, I don't know what our roster will look like next year because I don't know if we're going to have that position available to us. I'm curious, since Brody took over and the Brody era as the GM now being over, you, I am sure, viewed that from the former player perspective when he got hired. Well, that's weird. He's a former agent. Some of the guys on the team are his former clients. He seems like this PR master. What were your thoughts from the beginning of his tenure to the end of the job he did and how he fit in that role as the Mets GM?
Well, he certainly fit in as the new breed of general managers. It's just more, the general managers are more hands-on, more communicative to their players. In my generation, you never saw the general manager, only if you were playing bad and he called a meeting and he chewed you out. You very rarely saw them, but now it's totally, completely changed. And Brody was certainly that. He made bold moves right off the get-go. And, if Diaz pitched up to his capabilities, didn't have that glitch he had. That's not a good word to use right now. That little stutter, the bad year he had, if he had pitched like he had in Seattle, it might've been a whole different ball game, but, players have to perform and that's the bottom line. You can make all the changes you want, but if the players ultimately don't perform, then it's a bad reflection upon the general manager who made the moves.
And he, to his credit, I think, did everything he could to win now. You talk about Diaz. I mean, the Diaz and Cano trade, trading away Jared Kelnick, may end up being a terrible trade. Kelnick having not really been a factor for the Mariners yet at the big league level means we can't judge it yet.
Right.
But don't you think that Brody deserves credit for, in his time here, keeping the Mets competitive on the field and making them a player every offseason when he didn't have the benefit of Steve Cohen's $14 billion payroll from the ownership side?
Listen, for the last year for the Mets was not a good year. There was 16 teams in the playoffs out of 30, and the Mets were one of the 14 that didn't get in. And there's a lot of reasons why. It was a very peculiar year. You know, Alonso having his the bad year that he had, that really hurt because you relied on him to, you know, not, you didn't expect him to perform that poorly where he didn't hit in the clutch. And I'm not putting Pete down. I said from the beginning, I was worried about a sophomore jinx, and I do believe in a sophomore jinx. So now he's got time to clear his head, get ready for this season. And he's a big, if he's going to be here, there's going to be a DH, and he'll be here. He's a big key. You know, I don't expect him to hit 50 home runs. My gosh, 50 home runs is incredible. If he hits 40, he hits 35, you know, that's big. He drives in 100 runs. You know, he always hustles. He's a big key for this ball club, where last year he was really, for the basically first half of the season, he was a big out. It was a kind of a, and he was in a spot where, okay, you're hoping in the beginning. Remember, this was a sprint. It was 60 games, and it was a sprint, and Pete gets off to a bad start. So what are you going to do? You can't put him seventh in the order because you got 162 games. You know, you had to keep him like you would in this 162-game schedule. You'd keep him in the line, but if he started to falter a little bit, take him down put him down in the lineup, give him some days off on tough pitchers, because it's 162. But you didn't have that luxury with the 60 games. And therefore, he was always either hitting second or third or fourth or fifth. And he just wasn't being productive. He was just not having a good year, and it hurt the ball club. You know, and I'm not putting Pete down. It's just how the season played out. We'll see. I mean, right now to me, I don't have a clue what this club's makeup is going to be come spring training. I mean, we will get a better picture after the winter meetings. We'll definitely get a clearer picture.
By the way, Jeff just made me laugh because he texted me and said I referred to the worth of Steve Cohen as the payroll. So I said they had a $14 billion payroll. That would be a really high payroll for a Major League Baseball team, even in today's standards.
It would dwarf the Dodgers.
That would be Mike Trout plus Bryce Harper plus Nolan Arenado plus. You could probably get there. But that's not quite what we're at yet. But you all know what I meant. It's certainly going to be a different job. The Mets general manager, whoever it ends up being, is taking a different job than the one Brody had. And you're right to bring up the fact that 2020, even in the weird shortened season that it was not a success. It was the easiest season in our lifetimes to make the postseason. And the Mets weren't able to do that, even though they were built to win. They were one of the few teams that were built to win that didn't. The Cincinnati Reds were built to win. They snuck in at the very end, even though they underachieved. The Mets didn't get there. So it's a fair point about the legacy of Brody as the GM, because winning in 2020 was key, and they didn't do that. One of the pitching thing that you bring up, Keith, one of the options that the Mets have is Marcus Stroman. Now, he's been offered a qualifying offer. That's a lot of money for 1 year. If you were him, would you take it given the weird climate that we're in coming after the COVID season? Would you take the money and bet on yourself next year? Or is free agency too precious and he should probably just try and test out the market?
Well, what are the rules for him? If he's been given a qualifying offer, but can he become a free agent?
If he rejects it, he's a free agent, but he's got a draft pick compensation attached to him. So
okay. So he's either going to take it and stay with the Mets or run out there and be a free agent. And
he can either
pitching's at a premium, and right. Someone's going to sign him. So, I mean, he made a tough choice on his option year to sit out, you know, this season, which was clearly his right. So that to me was a surprise, because you want to play and show your wares for your option year. It's your option year for your free agent year. So he doesn't have that he didn't play last year at all. So I don't think it's that big of a risk. I mean, there's too many teams, and too many teams need pitching. Someone will pick him up. There'll be more than a few teams that'll be interested in him. I found it interesting that he kind of threw a little offer out at the Yankees, that he was, you know, might have been interested in the Yankees. So, you know, maybe that kind of makes me feel that he might test the waters.
Yeah, I tend to think he should take the qualifying offer, only because if he's a guy who clearly believes in his own talent. He's a very confident guy.
You think?
And so if he really thinks he's that good, take the $19 million basically from the Mets for 1 year and then just do this again next year, because in his own head, he probably thinks he'll be an ace for them. And so if Marcus Stroman thinks that he's going to perform that way, take $19 million and then do it again next year, because he didn't pitch last year. There's nothing to go off of. It's not crazy. Like, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of money.
And it's a lot of money. You're kidding? I'll go to the bank with that.
That's part of that $14 billion payroll, maybe. They got to add Bryce Harper and Mike Trout to it.
So $19 million is a plus. And then, you know, you're having a good year, and he's relatively young. You know, the Mets could give him an extension.
Yeah, or
your extension, whatever, you know. So he's got – I kind of tend that might be the best strategy for him. So we'll see. It's his, the ball's in his court. We can only defend.
How much George Springer have you watched? Obviously, he's played a ton in the postseason with the Astros over the last, you know, handful of years. Connecticut guy. Mets fans really want him in center. He may end up being a right fielder in 5 years, but right now he's a premium center fielder on the market, free agent. What do you think of that fit with the Mets?
Oh, I like George Springer. He's a talent. Did I read he was the only one that had a good year, or did he have a bad year? Because everybody's comparing now, you know, the trash cans.
Yeah.
Altuve didn't have such a great year.
Altuve and Bregman had bad years. Springer had a pretty good year.
Pretty good year. Okay. And I believe he's in his early 30s.
Yes. I think he might be like 31, 32.
Around there. So if the Mets are going all out for a winner, then
31,
you know, if you've got the money, I thought he was 31. You see, I'm not losing it yet.
Yeah, you nailed it. You nailed it. I got it wrong. You nailed it.
Anyway, he would be our center fielder, and he's a Connecticut guy. And it would be, if you're winning now, he would be a great addition to the ball club. Because we remember, we were a little top heavy. We're top heavy left-handed in our lineup. So it'd be another right-hand bat and a good one. He hustles. I know that. That's all I care about. He runs balls out. I think he cares. I think he's a good guy and a good attitude. So those are the things you look for as far as him coming in. Now he's a star. And not being, you know, a little uppity, he's going to be a guy that's going to fit in. He's a regular guy. I can sense that, which is important. It's important that your star players don't feel a cut above the other ones. They're just like, everybody's the same. It's very important.
All right, last one for you. So what Andy is telling us Sandy and Steve Cohen might do is pretty much be responsible with their spending, maybe take the contracts of players that other teams don't want to pay, like Brad Hand on the Indians didn't get a contract and he's not going to get picked up by them. Maybe the Mets sign him on a one-year deal, but he's expecting one big move. So if you were the GM, would you make that move Nolan Arenado? Would you make it Francisco Lindor, George Springer, JT Realmuto, or Trevor Bauer? Do you feel strongly about any of those five?
I would always lean towards the pitching, particularly our starting pitching is short, but they're not spring chickens, the starters that are available. You know, Bauer's a quality pitcher, upper echelon pitcher. Those are tough choices. So Lindor, you're getting him in the beginning of his prime. And Jimenez can You can sprinkle him in at second base. You know, those are tough choices. I mean, you're getting an all-star player in Lindor, and you're going to have to pay serious money. The fact that he's 27 and five-year deal, he's 32, I have no problem with that. You know, you're supposedly getting his quality years. And remember, the new philosophy now is that you're paying these younger players and signing them early for their free agency. And the older player now, they did that chart where they're for some reason, the older player is diminishing quicker than in our generation. And I really think a lot of that has to do with money. I think it's just hard to maintain like that Pete Rose tenacity through 20 years of your career. And I think before, when you didn't make that much money, there was incentive to play. But now, I mean, my gosh, these guys are making so much money. I mean, you're talking about paying Stroman $19 million. You know, and so if you got a five-year deal making $25 million a year, $20 million a year, I mean, you're like, you know, King Farouk. You're sitting pretty. So I'm sure our younger audience doesn't know who King Farouk is. We won't go into that. But I worry about motivation. And that has to do with what with temperament and the mindset of the player, which I know Frank Cashin always said when he traded for Frank Robinson for Mil Pappas, and Frank was an MVP with the Reds. They knew what they were getting, you know, on the field. But Frank was such a force in the clubhouse. And turn that country, he said, to turn that country club attitude in that Baltimore clubhouse into a tenacious team. That's what you don't know you're getting. Okay. What is the makeup of that player? You know, is he laid back or is he Pete Rose or that kind of temperament? So it's going to be very, very interesting in more ways than one. We got new ownership. We've got to get a team together for winter meetings. They got to be ready to take their spots running and get a plan. I'm sure Sandy has a plan, and it's going to be very, very, to me, one of the most interesting off seasons in Mets history.
Well, it's a good time to have a Mets podcast. Keith, we appreciate it as always. We'll be back with you all listeners later this week with Andy to discuss what we hear in this press conference. But until then, thanks for listening. Keith, we'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Thank you.
I'll be here.